Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
On ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Yeah, it is Monday, right? I'm not sure what day it is. We drove all the way back from drove back yesterday. Did it a one day deal yesterday. When I'm ready to get home, I'm ready to get home. We took 2 days going out. Stayed in Bryan, which is just north of College Station. Great place, man. I am great people, great place.
Where did you stay between here and Texas?
We stopped.
You did it in 2 days, right?
Yeah. We did it in 2 days. The first thought was, well, we might stop in and see Tex and Cindy on the way, but it was their anniversary. So we just drove. We drove to a little past Lafayette, which was more than halfway, and stayed there and then drove on in, got in. I was on the air. We were in some traffic.
I remember.
In Houston. God, let me tell you, Houston traffic, that is the worst I have ever driven in. We were just talking about it before the start of the show. Atlanta, nothing. Now, I haven't driven in L.A. since the pandemic, but L.A., nothing compared to Houston. It was the craziest, and I was more nervous about driving in that traffic when you're getting through Houston with all the exchanges of interstates. And I just mentioned this to you a minute ago. I did not see one police car in Texas, in the state of Texas. And it's probably because they fear for their lives. Because everybody, and I mean everybody, if you're not driving at least 75, get off the road.
And look,
speed limit 75. I was driving 85 to 90 and just being blown by on both sides. In the old days, you know, you think of Westerns. How did you tell the good guys from the bad guys?
The hats?
Yeah. I think that has now become trucks. There are black trucks and there are white trucks. And that's pretty much all I saw was giant. I mean, it was like F-350s and bigger that were going jacked up, that were going at least 100 and swapping from the far left lane to the far lane. I mean, cutting across 4 and 6 lanes and having people slamming on brakes, hitting horns and stuff like that. It was insane.
They'll be safe.
Insane.
They'll be safe with those vehicles. You know, you'll probably.
Who'll be safe with those vehicles?
Yeah, you know, in the accident. You know, they'll be fine.
Oh, you mean they feel like they're safe.
Yeah,
okay.
Be fine.
I was going to say they sure as hell aren't being safe driving.
Your car is not, you know, they're not considering what the other, you know, what happened to the other vehicles. No, I've heard, and this is anecdotal, although I did experience a little bit of it in Atlanta over the summer. But I've heard that in the last couple of years, and maybe you can trace it back to the pandemic starting, but I've heard that especially in big cities in America, the driving on freeways and interstates has really, really gotten dangerous on a regular basis.
I don't doubt that. I can say it surely is in Houston.
Yeah, maybe police shortages are playing a role. Like I don't know what's all contributing. You know, maybe some of it's, you know, people didn't drive for a year and decided, you know, now they want to go fast. I don't know. But, yeah, I saw a little bit of it in Atlanta, and to hear you talk of it. And I still have friends in Los Angeles, and we had people who came back from the Bay Area and had some stories like that, too. So it's not just one state
I'll tell
or
you
one
what,
city.
Jason Caldwell, I was just talking with Jason and Nathan and Justin Ferguson, and they were all together, and they were like, they'd never seen anything like they saw in Houston. So I felt, well, I'm right, because, golly, it was crazy. But yeah, we stayed at a great, great place in Bryan. Stayed at a winery. The family that started the first vineyard and winery in the state of Texas, an award-winning winery, sort of like a secluded type resort, which had a great rate. And I mean, it was just, it was great. The people there were great. God, the weather was hot. I got to the game.
Well, if you had a positive enough experience, I feel like as a non-local business, you know what I mean? Shout them out. Why not?
The Messina Hoff Winery and Resort in Bryan. I would encourage folks, go there. You know, if you're ever there around College Station, go check out the winery. They have tastings. They have a fantastic restaurant.
And I have nothing against local businesses, by the way. It's just there could be conflicts of interest if you just mention, you know, we've had this, we've been lectured we've received lectures from.
Hey, it's no place. No, I don't think there's any. I don't think there's any competition. It's not like a chain or anything here. So, no, that was great. Found a couple of great places to eat.
You'd never
been
to Kyle Field before.
No. Well, I mean, I've been out there, but I hadn't been to a football game.
Right. So this is your first. Yeah.
So
Kyle Field.
It was one of the hotter places I've been in a long time. Not the hottest, but man, it was hot. I had a pass, and I went to the. Went to the box for a little bit, but I wasn't going to let my wife just sit by herself.
Auburn didn't have a pass.
Auburn. Auburn hasn't had a pass in its last Power Five college football games, have they? Is that one right? Auburn hasn't passed for over 100 yards in its last five Power Five games.
I think you got to go back.
That is unbelievable.
I'm wondering how far is that? What, Mississippi State? Maybe. I mean, is it that far back? You got to go. I mean, that would be. Couple of
it's a ways.
Yeah,
it is a ways.
That's a little bit.
But yeah, it was hot, and Auburn melted in the second half after battling and really defensively giving themselves opportunity, going to the locker room down 6-3, and then third quarter was that was the end for Auburn.
There were warning signs in the first half offensively.
Oh yes, there were.
And this is one I was surprised. We'll welcome Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com into the show because he heard it too. He's already spoken up a little bit. But I thought that the problems for Auburn's offense against A&M's defense would be more evident at the line of scrimmage because of the way the two teams have recruited. I thought Auburn would struggle at wide receiver to get open. But it seems like, and I don't do this after Auburn losses very often, it seems like a lot of the struggles in that first half You can lay at the feet of the quarterback who
lay it at the feet of the offense.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yes, I mean, there's no question. Peyton Thorne really, really struggled. But golly, the penalties, Auburn's down there, and it's like, okay, they're in field goal range. No, they're not. They're in field goal range. No, they're not.
He didn't have a clean pocket enough, and there were times when receivers could have bailed him out, but there were also times when it felt like everything was there except the throw, and then later in the game felt like the pass rush started getting to him and his eyes started to move from downfield to what was coming right at him. I don't know if he threw the ball away in the game. There were times when it felt like he could have maybe saved Auburn some yards by getting rid of the ball rather than taking the sack. And then
there were some times when he didn't have an opportunity to do anything to get sacked.
There were times when he didn't have a chance either. So I just wonder, it's not all on Peyton Thorne, but I do think some of it.
But that's where, that's where the focus is going to go because that's your trigger man.
And it's the easiest thing for the coaching staff to change. Play calling will also be called into question. I think there were times when
I don't think there's any question about that. Brian, let me ask your opinion. I was asked this on the way in.
Okay.
When we're there listening to Hugh Freeze, and I was over there for had a question, but it got asked before my turn, so
I was able to listen live, so I heard Hugh Freeze as well.
When Hugh Freeze was talking about the RPOs, did you feel that he was saying that Peyton didn't run the RPOs or they weren't called?
I wasn't quite sure.
I mean, my feeling at the time was we need to call more RPOs.
Right. But he talked about that a week ago, so you assumed that they called more, and maybe Peyton just didn't run it right.
I wanted a little clarification on that because that was when he was sort of into talking about how uncomfortable it is for him not to call plays.
Yes.
He does not want to throw anyone under the bus, right? Like, he's had opportunities to do so. There have been times where he could deflect the blame to one party or one individual, and it seems like he's reasserting that this all sort of stands, you know, it's Hugh Freeze.
Well, he does say it ultimately all falls on him. But, I mean, he pointed out that Peyton, you know, that Peyton struggled. I mean, he will point out some numbers.
And he mentioned when he called the game-winning play against Cal, too. So, true. He will. I do wonder, is the question of how involved Hugh Freeze can be in the offense, is that something?
He said he's going to be more involved.
Yeah. And then I guess it's the matter of after the season's over, they'll decide how this goes and how involved he's going to be moving forward. But yeah, it sounds like that's a change that Auburn is looking at. And we got the email yesterday about the media opportunities this week, mm-hmm. and the viewing window era is over.
Nope.
Correct? Did they change that? Okay.
Back on.
Yeah, okay. He did say today that at least, for now and up until the open date, which is next week, it's going to be Peyton Thorne the start.
When we got the email last night that did not...
Probably. I think it's probably.
When we got the email last
night... I feel like that's going to be the case this week. That doesn't guarantee that it's going to be that way.
When we got the email last night that gave off the schedule and there was not a viewing window included for the first time all season...
Oh, that made red flags were raised. It's like, oh, quarterback change.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks made, jump to that conclusion. And so, to hear that we actually have a viewing window, we'll see what they're doing. Maybe Robbie and even Holden are getting more first-team reps than they've gotten so far this year, or maybe they're focused on fixing this thing with Peyton Thorne as the quarterback, although I thought there seemed to be a lot that needed to be fixed, especially in that first half against before everything melted down.
Here's one thing to keep in mind. Peyton was 6-12. He didn't play well, right? I'm not pretending he did.
No question.
Robbie came in and was 1-4. Holden came in and was 2-7. So it's not like one guy stepped up and was the man. Right, so I know people are going to call in and say we've got to start this guy. I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I don't think there's a you have to do this answer. I think there are a lot of problems in the passing game. The protection mm-hmm. was bad.
He called out receivers again for not running routes.
I thought
properly.
When I was watching it live live on TV. I was here at home. That there were at least two occasions when Auburn was in man coverage and the ball was thrown down the field, and I didn't think Auburn's receivers competed for the ball like I would expect a Power 5 SEC receiver
I agree. I would say at least two. And then, of course, there were two occasions when Auburn had receivers running wide open. Three, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
Two from Peyton, one from Robbie.
Yep.
Where they had receivers wide open and the ball's overthrown.
And I thought the throw to the one that comes to mind immediately would be...
Jay Fair.
I was going to say...
Tyler?
The incompletion to Camden Brown on third and long... which I thought was a really well-placed ball. The A&M defender.
The A&M defender
makes a play, but that felt like, oh, that's
yeah,
a...
That's one where you've got to make that. If you're an SEC receiver.
One to him and one to Hooks, I thought.
Right.
And both those guys got out-competed. And I just... That, to me, just... I'm like, everything is going bad in Auburn's passing game. Can you guys not step up and make a play?
You don't get that many opportunities. Right. Make it when you do.
I'm not excusing the quarterbacks. They were bad too.
There were problems. There were problems in protection. Yeah. There were problems in passing. There was problems in receiving.
And I think it's fair to be critical of some of the play calls. I hated Auburn's first series in the second half because it looked like the first series in the first half that was so bad, right? That they come back and run the same thing. And there's one particular play. It was the one where Auburn had a scoop and score, and it was called back. I think it was – did they score on that play?
Are you talking about when Auburn scored?
No, I'm talking about when Auburn turned the ball
over. When Damari got hurt.
Right. Yeah, Damari's fumble, which was turned into an incomplete pass after review. Damari seemingly injured his shoulder reaching for the defender on that play. I think that's where the shoulder injury occurs.
I don't understand why you would ask Brendan Frazier, who's a good kid, right? But he's a big boy. He's not really movable. Ask him to block somebody out in space.
Now, here's a question I had. And again, I'm not in the box. I'm there at the game, though I'm in the stands. And Hugh Freeze talked about this today. He pointed out Luke Deal as leader there on offense.
Right.
How much did Luke play?
I can check.
I noticed Brandon a lot more Saturday. And maybe he was in the game plan. They were going to do something. But there were quite a few times where I thought I would see Luke Deal, and I saw Brandon in the game.
So maybe that's a message from Hugh Freeze as well, to single out Luke Deal when other guys are maybe playing more Saturday.
Just something that, I mean, you know, that's one of the things that I'll do when I'm in the box. I like to keep up with who all's in the game, and I was just mentally keeping up with everybody.
Brandon Frazier, 14 snaps. I don't see Luke Deal. Tyler Fromm, 11 snaps. Where's Luke? Did he not play? There he is. He played 11 snaps.
So. 11. That's what I meant. I was surprised. I didn't see him in the game very much. And he's usually, you know, he's usually in there a good bit.
Yep. And the other thing I would say, and I'm certainly not a coach, maybe they get this RPO thing down better and it gets better. But to me, the running backs, even with Damari, you know, now injured, out with a shoulder injury for a little while now, Jarquez Hunter to me looks, well, he got banged up in the game, I thought.
Yeah.
And I also, if I'm being honest, I think he's been a little, I don't think he's been totally in. I think what happened this summer has.
He looked better, though, I thought, Saturday.
Sure. But I think it's, I don't want to say that, I don't know how to word this correctly, but I just think it's affected him, right? I'm not saying that it's not his fault, right? Because he was involved in that. But I think it's taken away from his playing ability some, too. But I still think that Auburn's running backs are the best personnel they have on offense, and they need to be featured more, right? I think the offense needs to run through them, and right now it's being run through the quarterbacks through this RPO system. And I'm, you know, I think Hugh Freeze believes in this, and who am I to question him? But, you know, we'll see.
334-321-1390. We were holding and wanted to try to get Susan, if you get a chance. Was that Susan that we lost? Susan, if you get a chance, give us a call back. We'll get to our first break. And Yellowhammer, we'll get to you as well when we come back here on the Monday Drive. Yep.
This is 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get to the phone. And Yellowhammer is up first. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Good afternoon. So here's my take on things. And it's well illustrated, I think, by a statistic that I mentioned a week or two ago on your show, which is that the Georgia offensive line last year allowed 9 sacks over 15 games. We allowed 7 in 1, and there was probably a pile of hurries on top of that, too. So we're just not providing the quarterback, whoever he is, with the time to effectively operate a passing game. And the fact that we put Robbie in there to replace Thorne is no slight on Thorne. It's the same thing that happened last year with T.J. Finley. We had to put somebody in there who could run away from all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that does make sense, yes.
But I also think some of those sacks were because Peyton froze up early, didn't get rid of the ball, and had his eyes on the rush instead of down the field. So I think
that's something Hugh Freeze addressed right after the game. Yeah. He talked about being affected by the guys from the edge and not keeping your eyes downfield.
So I think it was both. I think it was a failure by Thorne, a failure by the offensive line. The wide receivers were not as effective as they should have been. There was missing people wide open when you did have an opportunity. There's just everything that could go wrong in the passing game pretty much went wrong for Auburn last Saturday.
Well, it's just my thing that they all started from the offensive line or the blocking, the timing for the ability to throw a pass. I mean,
so Justin Ferguson went back in today's email, and he, by his number, I think he thought there were 10 times in the game that Peyton Thorne had what Justin thought was a clean pocket, and I think Peyton was about 4 of 10 on those passes. So it wasn't just the offensive line failing to protect Peyton Thorne. I thought there were times when the pass protection struggled. I thought there were times when Peyton Thorne had enough time to make a play. Now once Auburn went to Ashford, and I think especially Gurner, it's tough to parse out the results too much because the game plan had clearly changed to that point. But in those first couple of, I mean, how many points did Hugh Freeze say he thought the offense
could have had. He said at least 12 by the half.
Yeah, he thought the offense left double digits on the board in the first half with miscues. And yeah, I think there's blame to spread around. But there were also times when, you know, the quarterback had blocking and receivers, and the play wasn't made.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're right, because we're about to, you know, as far as the – it's not all on the offensive line, because that's probably one of the harder things to fix than anything else. And so, you know, we're coming into a stretch with some games that are going to be every bit as tough as Texas A&M.
Well, here's the thing, Yellowhammer, and a lot of people might ought to take a look at this. It's hard to blame the offensive line when there's five of them and they're trying to block six or seven – of the other teams because of a penalty or something and puts you in third and long. You're in third and long, and you've got five guys blocking. Maybe you keep a tight end in, and they've got seven coming. You're still one short.
We asked – well, we were just talking about that for a second. But, yeah, I mean, we said last week, and virtually everyone we talked to, when we would ask, you know, what are some things that need to break right for Auburn to win at College Station –
they don't need to be third and long.
Winning first down. Right? I think Don Dunn talked about first and third down.
Auburn had some decent first down plays. It's just, and then they had some second. It would be second and not unreasonable, and then there'd be something.
They'd find a way.
Something to make it third and long.
They'd roll snake eyes on second down over and over and get to third. And yeah, that's something that you find yourself in those situations. And we wondered about Peyton Thorne's ability or his authority to change anything at the line of scrimmage. When it seems like the defense is sending more than Auburn is blocking, or when the matchups don't look right,
Auburn have any? I mean, it doesn't seem, Brian. I mean, can you recall? Doesn't seem like there are any like hot reads, like somebody's coming a quick, because there don't seem to be too many quick passes to tight ends or, you know, slot guys.
Yeah, that's probably a question we should ask.
Because something you usually see when the other team's overloaded and looks like they're coming. Yeah.
There's a play, and I think it's a second. It might even be a first down play. The one where there's clearly more A&M players than blockers, and both the receiver and Dylan Wade both point out the extra blitzer.
I didn't see that. There
needs to be a timeout on the sideline. I'll show you the play during the break, Bill. But there needs to be a timeout called there. And it needs to get ironed out. I don't know what authority the quarterback has, but someone's gotta step up. I'm fine with calling first half timeouts too. Like, I mean, often you need.
I mean, see, we had a good vantage point, but sometimes you miss things.
Often you need all three timeouts at the end of the first half. But by and large, I think coaches need to be more willing in the first half of college football games to say, I don't like the look of this play, especially now that you run fewer plays. Like, if something doesn't look right, save those timeouts.
Of course, when you do those, you run into what Arkansas ran into at the end of the LSU game.
You do, man,
that was a fun game, but Arkansas used all three of their timeouts in the second half early.
That's why I think in the first half you got to be
right.
I think being willing to throw a timeout down. To switch up a bad looking play. You know, coaches need to be willing. Yeah, save your timeouts for the fourth quarter. And Arkansas is a great example of why.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Milhouse is up next. Hey, Milhouse.
Hey, how are y'all this afternoon?
Pretty good.
You stole a little bit of my thunder. I was going to say, didn't notice any hot routes or anything by backs or quick game from the receivers. And I guess that could be what Coach was saying when receivers ran the wrong route. But another thing, I mean, I coached for a little bit, and you see a blitz coming, you replace where he's vacating from, you replace the blitzer with a body. And I didn't see us do much max protecting or throwing over the middle. I just wanted to hear what y'all had to say about that.
No, I agree 100%. I don't know if it was by design or they just didn't execute it right. You Freeze did mention the possibility of using more max protect in today's press conference. So maybe that's something to look at, because that's certainly an issue with this team right now. Among many.
No, I agree with you, Brian. I mean, that seems like that would be a couple of things that you would do that would help out the quarterback when he sees something like that coming.
And something stands out in my mind from the Baylor days. Like, I remember, I don't think RG3 audibled at the line of scrimmage, and it was a change he had to make going from Baylor to the NFL. So maybe
this is that's just not Phillip Montgomery's game.
And when you emphasize tempo, maybe the emphasis is get to the line of scrimmage and run the play. And you run into situations like Auburn did a couple of times on Saturday where you run a play and it really seems like the defense had had your number before the play was even snapped.
Appreciate the call, Milhouse, 334-321-1390. We'll get one more before we get to our bottom of the hour break. And Brian is next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are y'all?
Doing all right, Brian. Good to hear from you.
Hey, good deal. Hey, you know what? I understand it is a talent gap, and I think everybody's aware of that, but maybe it's just me, but I'm getting a little tired of hearing from you about the talent gap. Like, at some point, let's acknowledge that he was hired in November, late November. He handpicked a lot of these guys that he brought in. And if I'm not mistaken, he had as much money as anybody to go out and get a quarterback. Now, some of that didn't bear out on the quarterback front like he maybe wanted it to. But I don't know. To me, I need him to coach up his guys a little more. I didn't like what I saw from the offensive game plan. I didn't like what I saw offensive game plan versus Cal. And to just excuse it as, well, you know, I would have liked to be in this position when we have three more recruiting classes. I get it. Everybody would. Just not where we're at. But we've got to do a little better on offense.
Oh, I think Hugh Freeze – hold on, though, Brian, because I think you're making a good point. But I think Hugh Freeze has also second-guessed some of the decisions that the coaching staff made, you know, in Saturday's game. It's not all on Texas A&M, you know, outmanned Auburn and had better players. I do think – that a lot of what he's saying when he talks about the talent gap is aimed at recruits.
It is, but you know, Brian, you're not the first person who's mentioned that to me today. I mean, you're not the second person that's mentioned that to me today, that they're like, okay, yeah, we understand, but I agree with you, Dan. I think that is a message more for recruits.
And a lot of times he's answering questions that people ask him, right? And one thing that Auburn people are going to have to get used to is Hugh Freeze speaks very openly. Well,
he'll give you much more candid answers.
Right? That's just the way it is. You know, that's his style. And, you know, it grates on you when you're not winning a lot, but I'm sure you'll probably love it. You know, maybe when Auburn starts winning a lot and he talks about how great things are going.
It's fair, and it's fair for Auburn fans to say maybe bad losses like the way the second half went down on Saturday, maybe that will hurt recruiting. To that, I would point out, Hugh Freeze lost three games by 19 or more points in his first year as Ole Miss head coach. Hugh Freeze lost 66-31 to Texas in his first year as Ole Miss head coach. Didn't seem to hurt recruiting. A couple of years later, Ole Miss had the most talented team they've ever had in you know by the recruiting rankings. So, yeah, I get your point, but I think a lot of what he's doing there is recruiting, which Auburn fans have been saying for years they want the head coach to focus on.
Absolutely. And Dan, if you could, go back and look at those three losses he had by more than 19. I'd be curious if those was more offensive problems caused those losses. It sounds like the Texas
No, those were more defensive. You're right. Brian.
I think there's a 38-10 in there to either Alabama or Georgia in his first year, but I think they did move the football more in his first year there.
And that's kind of my problem. I mean, it's just really hard to watch what we watched Saturday, guys. That was an historically bad looking Auburn offense.
And that
was really, really bad. And
you're right.
To have Ken Austin and Phillip Montgomery and Hugh Freeze on that sideline or in that press box and to look like that four games in, that's tough pill to swallow.
Well,
I appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Brian. And Brian Matthews.
Yes.
You know, sitting in there watching Hugh talk about that, you could tell it pains him for Auburn to be struggling offensively.
Because
that's his thing. And that's what I hear from a lot of people. It's like, he's supposed to be an offensive coach. This isn't any better than the last couple of, you know, I mean, that's what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah.
And I know it's bothering Hugh Freeze.
Well, he said it was bothering him today, right? And he said it was really tough on him not to step in and do more.
Mm-hmm.
He made this decision, whether you agree with it or not, so he could spend more time recruiting and rebuilding Auburn that way, and it's working really well. Auburn's putting together a great recruiting class right now that has a chance to be even better after this weekend. It's going to be a huge recruiting weekend. So That's important. There's no way for Auburn to get back to competing at the top of the conference without
recruiting.
High school recruiting.
But right. you just wonder, will recruit, you know, do the offensive recruits need to see something more offensively?
I think he's still at the point in his tenure where he can sell his offense and his vision and what they're capable of doing and what he's done with receivers. Right, it does. But I still think that works. I don't think the first season is a killer no matter what happens.
I agree. You know? All right. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in as we continue here on the Monday Drive.
888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 22 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get back to the phone. And Terry is next. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I know it's not my nature to be optimistic, but couldn't Hugh Freeze use this as a recruiting tool to say, hey, look how bad we need you?
Yes.
That's sort of what I was saying during the commercial break, is it feels like good recruiters can take the situation when it's bad and they can make lemonade by saying to recruits, hey, come in and you can contribute immediately and be part of the turnaround. And then when things are good, good recruiters can say, isn't this something you want to be a part of? We got it rolling. Join the party. And so it seems, I would think that Hugh Freeze would use whatever happens this year as a recruiting tool.
Sure.
At the same time, I understand why people would think if you want to recruit, if you want to make this a destination for great quarterbacks and great receivers, they're probably going to want to see some proof of that on the field. And the longer you go without it, the harder it's going to be to sell those guys on coming to Auburn.
I guess the best thing he can do right now is say, you know, look at those plays last week where could have been a big play. You know, you can make that play.
I think what he probably said, Walker White would hit those passes.
I think that Hugh Freeze feels most quarterbacks should hit those passes.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's the frustrating part. Like a previous caller said, the offensive struggles, because when Auburn struggles on offense, I hate to tell the people out there, but these people think, well, let's run the ball, play great defense. Not going to happen. Doesn't work in 2023. It just doesn't. And it's irritating when people say that, because, you know, this is an offensive game. It's what makes sports better. What makes the highlights. And that's what people want to see. I mean, the Miami Dolphins just hung 70 yesterday. I don't think I've ever seen 70 scored in an NFL game.
No, I have never have.
And then I looked up, it was at 1966. That's the year I was born, which makes it even more unbelievable, 1966. You know, it scored 70. I expected it sometime in the 80s, maybe with the Chargers and Dan Fouts of that group. So I couldn't believe it.
You know, Terry, I would say long term, it's really tough to win major conference college football without a dangerous passing game. You're looking and you're seeing consistently teams with great quarterbacks and great receivers in the playoff. As for this season, you know, if Thorne's accuracy issues continue, I do wonder what he brings versus playing Robbie, who could at least evade the pass rush, which Peyton Thorne had a real problem with on Saturday.
But then, when he heard about Peyton Thorne, when he came in, his accuracy was his true asset.
Yeah, and that's what Peyton said about himself.
Right. Decision making accuracy in the two road games, I have seen none of that.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I that's been the biggest surprise to me. It really has been kind of shocking, to be honest.
Right. And I would love for a Santi just to ran over Jimbo Fisher. would have made my decade.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering, maybe y'all can answer this question, but if Santi had run into Jimbo Fisher and not scored, would they have awarded Auburn a touchdown?
I don't think they could have awarded him a touchdown. They would have just, you know, there would have been a penalty, but there wouldn't have been.
And I think it would have merited an ejection from Fisher. I think if you disrupt a play, I think if you're on the sideline and you disrupt the play to that degree, I would hope that the officials have the authority to throw you out of the game.
May not give him a touchdown, but probably give him first and goal to 1.5 or something.
Oh no, I think if Asante runs into Jimbo Fisher and goes down, like if Jimbo Fisher makes the tackle on that play, I think it's 15 yards from the spot where Fisher tackles him, and Fisher is ejected from the game.
I think that's what it is.
I think that's what happens in that situation. I mean, I've seen people get sideline warnings this season for a lot less than Jimbo. I mean, Jimbo Fisher was setting a screen.
He was 6 yards. Yeah.
I mean, what in the world?
Could you imagine a thank you mail he would have got if he'd have ran over Jimbo Fisher? Take care, guys.
All right, Terry. Back to the phones, and Tex is next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right.
I hate to agree with Terry, but I agree with Terry. By the way, I heard the recruiting question about getting a quarterback, et cetera. Wasn't his number one choice for quarterback not allowed to get into school at Auburn because of classes
they
and
went,
not enough qualifications
they went to like
graduate school?
4 and 5 guys they looked at before they settled on Thorne. So, I mean, it's, you know, saying right. Auburn had the most money and had got all these first choices.
Yeah, you,
is not
you don't just get everybody.
How it went through the portal.
I think they did a heck of a job in right. the transfer portal, but Auburn wasn't going to be the top destination for you know for the Sam Hartmans of the world and things like that.
Well,
I mean,
Sam,
it wasn't just about the money.
Sam Hartman was in particular was a guy who I mean, it felt like folks thought from the moment he went into the portal like there was one school he was going to, and even I don't know, guys like the Incarnate Word quarterback that went to Washington State and stuff like I like yeah I mean I think. That's a good point, Tex. Like, I'm shocked that it doesn't feel like this is it's the first year. Like, if we learn something about Hugh Freeze or college football on Saturday, it's that there is a limit even for great recruiters, which I think Hugh Freeze would qualify as. So far, it seems like Deion Sanders would qualify as a great recruiter. They remade their rosters and then ran into teams that had been recruiting for years and stacking great recruiting classes one after the other, and especially in the second half, neither of those games were competitive.
Correct. Grayson's an RPO player, by the way. I'm not sure that Thorne's offense was a true RPO at his previous location. That's the reason we don't run RPO very often. We run R and we run P. We don't run RPO. So... The other thing
and a lot of people watching are saying, oh,
they don't do either.
Well, P is relative, depending on how you spell it. So my other thought is if you're running the football the way we did in the beginning, historically, running teams run off of play action, and we didn't go and run off play action. And when they made an adjustment and stopped the run, then that changed the game completely because they're going to line up and come at you. They're going to make you do something different. Our issue is every time there was pressure, the quarterback's head goes down. The only thing you can see down are knees and feet.
You know what?
And you can't throw it to the knees and feet.
You know what's amazing about that too, Tex, is that with Peyton Thorne having played – I forget the exact number of games now.
26 starts at Michigan State.
And now four at Auburn. So 30 starts as a Power 5 college football quarterback. You watch, and again, this is just one player, but when you watch Colorado and Shedeur Sanders, like one of the things that's really striking to me is for a guy making his major college football debut and who was playing at Jackson State, that's all he does is when it starts to get to him, he's looking down. I mean, he's keeping the play alive with his legs, but he's keeping the eyes downfield, and the arm is the ultimate weapon. And yeah, it's just something that's an aspect of Peyton Thorne's game, and maybe he's just had a couple of bad days. I don't know, but that's an aspect of Peyton Thorne's game that I'm surprised by too. Is the way that the pass rush gets to him and forces him to maybe move from looking downfield to looking at the
and we've continued to hear some criticism about receivers cutting off routes or maybe not playing all the way through the play or being in the right spot. And if that's the case, there has to be trust when you're looking down the field that you're going to have guys in certain spots. And maybe there's not that trust right now. And I tell you, it's not going to get any easier. Look, this weekend's going to be extremely tough. You get an off week, and then you're coming down here.
I know.
And I hate to break this to you. They're going to score on our team.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
LSU's going to score the football.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be able to score. You can't control the clock running the football because every time they get it, they're going to go 3 to 5 minutes, and they're going to score. They might not score every time they have the football.
They'll
score a
few times.
They have the ability to do
that.
Yes,
they do.
So that's – to me, if Georgia just tries to run the football against us, but even them, they'll run play action on first down, especially if they run the ball twice on you on the first part of the series and get a first down. They'll run play action on you and throw the football. We don't at this point, and it's hard to tell, but because we don't know what play is actually called, but we can run the football, and we're better at running the football when we run lead or power, where we've got extra guys in front pulling and making the defense move one way and we're pulling the other way. But if we don't throw the ball off play action and throw it in running downs, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. And Bill, the more I went back and re-listened to the press conference just to make sure. I think there's a great deal of frustration between the play sheet that's on the field and the one that's in the press box.
Yeah, well, I think you're
right.
I agree.
Absolutely right about that.
And it just seems that there's a little angst about, but you mentioned that to me earlier today, Bill, about the guy that was on the show out of Birmingham talking about what a difficult play caller to play against.
And I'm trying to remember who it was. I mean, it was a well-known former defensive coordinator, and they were talking about – this was primarily about Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, and play calls, and they said, who's the toughest? And he said, Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze was the toughest play caller for him to go against. He said he would have ranked Hugh, then Sarkisian, then Kiffin, then Petrino were his top four play callers. And I thought, wow, Auburn fans want to see that.
Well, and lastly, what was our goal for this year? To win six and be bowl eligible, right?
Still very much a possibility.
Still in play.
Very much, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I think everybody ought to take a real deep breath. Yes, it was ugly. I mean, it was really ugly.
And it may be ugly the next two games, too, to be honest with you.
Correct. But it's still, we get some guys healthy. We play good defense. I didn't think we kicked the ball very well, but we covered well. And if we can get some guys healthy over this time frame and work something out offensively that we can do successfully, I think six is well within reach, if not seven.
Yeah.
And if we do that, that was the original goal, six or seven.
Yep. I mean,
one game didn't get you out of that six or seven.
Once you get past LSU, every one of those six remaining games is a winnable game. Not that Auburn's going to win all of them, but they're much
they
more
can.
Winnable. Yes.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, text. We are running way behind. Got to get to our final break. We'll get right back to the phones when we return here on the Monday Drive.
This is Zach Alsobrook with Alsobrook Law.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back to the Monday Drive. Right back to the phones we go, and John is up next. Hey, John, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, good afternoon. I agree with everything the last caller, Tex, said. He was pretty astute. I like his reasoning. But in my opinion, the game Saturday was eerily reminiscent of the 2015 game against LSU where Jeremy Johnson had his come apart, and it appears that for whatever reason that our quarterback Peyton Thorne is gun shy and apprehensive and second guessing himself. I'm not sure, but this twice on the road with the Cal and A&M where he's look like a cat shaking out of a sack. I mean, he looks really, really uptight.
I think Hugh Freeze today pretty much said, I mean, he didn't guarantee that anybody's going to be, going to keep their position long term, but he pointed out what a great week Peyton had, but it needs to translate on the field. So, yeah. if he doesn't react well to pressure, well, then don't be shocked that there's not a change.
If they went to Robbie, right? But do you really want to go to Holden right now when you're playing Georgia and then at LSU? This that could like set him back for a, you know, for who knows how long if it goes bad for him, right?
Oh, I think making a change now would be making the change from Peyton to Robbie because you think Robbie's going to be able to get the, away from the rush against Georgia and LSU better than Peyton will. Like that would be my guess. Would be, and if Peyton Thorne's accuracy is failing him, what is the advantage of playing him over Robbie Ashford at that point, especially if the run game is more effective with Robbie on the field? So that would be my guess as far as if they make a change. If they don't make the change, I would think Peyton Thorne goes into Saturday with the shortest of leashes imaginable, right? You got a couple of drives to get something going, and if you don't, we got to try somebody else, and maybe that is more permanent if they bench Peyton Thorne again for Robbie Ashford.
Appreciate the call, John. If you got some more, we're out of time. You can is he still there? Yeah, you can hang on if you want, John, and we'll resume this. We've got Marcus. We've got who else do we have? And Greg, hey, we've got our phone lines full as we head to our top of the hour break. And you can, we'll talk to you guys in that order if you hang on for hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Here in the studio, got Drew at the controls. Hour number two of the drive brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. Bless you, Drew. You all right? Okay, good. A busy first hour, as you might expect, after Auburn's 27-10 loss at Texas A&M.
If you missed any of hour number one, podcast of The Drive available wherever you listen to podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the Podcast Center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And you can we'd love for you to join in. When a phone line clears, we've got a full bank of calls right now. The number to get you through, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. Text box also presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
All right, and let's get to the phones. And Greg has been hanging on through the break. Hey, Greg. Oh, is it Marcus first? Marcus. We got Marcus first. Marcus hung on through the break, too, and hopefully he's still there. Hey, Marcus.
I am. Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing fine.
Good to hear from you, Marcus.
You too. I don't really know if it matters if it's Hugh calling plays or if it's Phillip calling plays right now, because we don't have the personnel to execute what they want to do. And, you know, I thought we'd struggle at quarterback. I thought we'd struggle at receiver. We don't have the people to separate, so we all see that. The thing that's disappointing to me, I thought we were going to be better up front. We really struggled to me against Cal, and our running backs have not performed the way I thought they were going to be. I look at certain positions. I don't know how well we're coached. And to be honest with you, in certain areas, I think Robbie maybe played better for Harsin than he's played so far with Gus. Because he came in the third quarter. I think we had minus yards in the third quarter against A&M. And obviously it's not going to get easier the next couple of weeks with Georgia and LSU. And I think Hugh's going to have to hit the transfer portal hard again, and we've got to get some better players. So until we get better players, I don't think it matters who's calling plays. We've got to get some receivers can separate. We've got to get a better quarterback. And you're right about Peyton. Peyton starts looking at the rush, and he doesn't look downfield anymore, and he's not the answer. I don't know that Robbie is, and like you guys said, I don't know if you want to throw Holden in right now with the people coming up, but to me, he's the most natural passer we have. The other two really do not look comfortable throwing the football.
No, and then Holden struggled throwing the ball Saturday.
The one thing you said
was
he said he looked really poised in the pocket.
Yeah, he said, but he was one for five. He said he was one for five accuracy,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, one for five on passes he should have made, which is, you know.
And I would point out that what we've seen from Robbie thus far this year has been skewed by the fact that he's the backup quarterback coming in cleanup duty, or he's being used situationally. Like I think that you know, seeing.
When he had the show, start in the second half against A&M, and guys, it was, I think we had minus 11 yards in the third quarter.
That's true. It was a 6-3 game. Remember?
No, it was not a good looking drive to begin. I mean, one of the first drive of the second half was ugly. I think Robbie was on the field for Auburn's best drive of the second half as well. You know, for whatever consolation that would be. But I do, not that I'm, you know, I was pretty firmly of the opinion that it needed to be Peyton Thorne. Saturday, I started to think that if Peyton Thorne's accuracy isn't there and he's not going to be able to get away from the rush, maybe you need to go to a quarterback who can extend plays with his legs like Robbie Ashford.
I think at this point, either you play Robbie or you play Holden. I don't think Peyton's the answer. I mean, I think he was going to lose his job at Michigan State, and I think there's a reason why he was getting beat out there. And to me, he's not really shown me much in the Auburn uniform that makes me believe he's an SEC quarterback.
Well, that's, yeah.
I don't.
Just my opinion.
Well, no. I mean, I was going to say, I don't know. I don't know that I told somebody else earlier today. I don't know that Auburn's got an SEC winning quarterback on its roster.
I will say this. I think Hugh Freeze and his staff need to be ruthless in the offseason and really starting in December. They're going to have to make some really tough decisions because getting this football program back on track is the number one priority, and if that means you've got to make some tough choices and make some big moves, whether it's on your staff and or personnel on the current team or going out and getting another quarterback through the portal, you got to do whatever it takes to have a much more competitive team by next year.
Agreed. All right, guys. Well, let's pray that we have a better offseason. We can bring some talent in. I know that we're getting some good young receivers from the South Alabama. We've got the kid coming in from Foley that's going to be dynamic. Yep. I think there's a really good player coming in from Benjamin Russell, and I think there's a kid coming in from one of the Mobile schools, maybe Baker. All those kids are going to make us better because I don't know that we have a true SEC receiver on the field right now either.
There's every reason. Appreciate the phone call, Mark. There's every reason, Brian. I mean, you follow recruiting.
Yes.
You do it as well as anybody. There's every reason to believe that the team Auburn brings on the field to begin next year will be more talented than the one Auburn has at the moment, just based on the momentum in recruiting that we've seen thus far and the work that coaching staff has put in. And we've seen, I think Miami would be the example I used on the Max Roundtable earlier today. Last year, Mario Cristobal's first year at Miami, they go to College Station, they don't score a touchdown. It's a 17-9 loss the week after A&M lost
right, and Auburn didn't score an offensive touchdown.
A year later, A&M goes to Miami and
they put up 48.
Miami's scoring at will in the second half. That's one of the best offensive lines in college football. I think that's a team that I would, if I were a voter, I feel like Miami's a team where I'd be higher on them than the average person because they seem to have everything you would want in it. Like they're a dark horse. I think they could beat Florida State. I think they're a dark horse ACC team. Like that is a really impressive team in year two. A lot of that has to do with what Mario Cristobal and his staff did after year one. Supplementing the roster.
And if you look at Hugh Freeze and his tenure at Ole Miss, I don't think there's anything he did better than recruiting and developing receiver talent and putting that talent eventually in the NFL. And Perry Thompson from Foley, who they flipped from Alabama, is a huge signing. Bryce Kane, who they brought into camp and just was phenomenal. And then if you watch what he's doing his senior year, it's incredible. This guy's going to play the slot position and is going to be so dynamic and such a big play threat there that it's going to change Auburn's offense. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, there was a recent decommitment from Georgia who's a major Auburn target receiver?
Nykar.
I believe that's right.
I believe he's coming in this weekend for a visit. That's another receiver. And then Malcolm Simmons from Alex City is a great athlete, a guy who's got an incredible vertical, who's going to develop into a good receiver very soon. And then even Jalewis Solomon, who Auburn has signed or has committed as a cornerback or a defensive back, he's also a very good receiver. So that receiving room is going to really get an influx of talent, I think, going into next year, and they're just going to have to make do with what they got and continue to push these guys to get better and, you know, try to find – you know, Jay Fair stepped up, all right? Give him credit, right? I mean, if Peyton Thorne makes a good throw, how long? Well,
that's
a touchdown.
That's a touchdown. Is that 40? It was 40, a 40
something yard.
40 something yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's
easy.
Gone. Right. And mm-hmm. Javaris, when he's healthy, is we know he's
yeah. And we did get to see 5 and 6 on the field at the same time Saturday. Didn't really matter, but I like that. At least that they're trying that.
Yeah.
All right. 334-321-1390. Now we'll get to Greg. Hey, Greg.
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
All right. That's a long way out there and back, man. I'll tell you that. Driving, it's a long way.
Well, I'm gonna tell y'all something. The sky ain't falling. I'm gonna say some things on there, and I don't care if it pisses some people off or not. We got some hypocritical fans out there that ain't played a down of football in their daggum life. I'm gonna tell y'all something. They ain't sitting there thinking, look, I feel like I've said this before. I'm pretty sure I said it about Bo Nix, but everybody knew better about that too then. I'm going to tell you something. Thorne might not be the answer. I don't, you know, that's yet to be seen. He ain't near as talented as Bo Nix was by any means. But, yeah, he's dropping his eyes. Let me ask y'all a question. You got a guy that's named starting quarterback. Has it ever felt like he's a starting quarterback at Auburn? Honestly, just yes or no, true or false?
You mean because of the emphasis on Ashford from the moment Thorne's been the starter?
If I'm talking about the next breath. Was but Rob is going to have his look. If this is me right here, reading between the lines, he knows he needs some more receivers. He knows he needs some big time guys. He got what he could get when he could get them. Going forward, he's wanting to pass the ball, wanting to do some things. I think him and Montgomery's got a little riff or something going on. I don't know what's going on right there about that. But you can't sit there and play musical chairs with your quarterback and think he's going to find continuity. That's the one spot on the dang field that you got to have continuity, and you got to have somebody back there that you can build some confidence in, and they ain't – we're 4 games in the year, and this kid right here ain't – you know, his games, he's not even finishing. I mean, tell me how in the heck that right there is supposed to be a starting quarterback for Auburn. I mean, how's he supposed to get better? I don't see it. I don't understand it. I don't know who's calling that.
Greg, on the Thorne point, like I really thought the Samford game was a step in the right direction. I know it was an FCS opponent, but I was like, okay, you showed that it was his. You know, he got every snap at quarterback in the first half. It was not a rotation. You know, felt like he was allowed to make mistakes. He threw an interception in that game and was still out there the subsequent drive. Like I thought that was a you would hope that was going to be something of a confidence building thing. I don't know if any of the progress Auburn showed against Samford, and again, not to lay it all at the feet of Peyton Thorne, but I think that even someone who's been sympathetic to the struggles of the first couple of weeks and the adjustments Peyton Thorne is making, like I was troubled by what I saw on Saturday. And that's not to say Auburn has a different quarterback that could have gone in and won the game for them against A&M, but I was troubled at some of the stuff we saw early from Peyton Thorne in College Station.
There ain't no doubt. Now, I'm not disagreeing with that at all, but I think the game plan for Thorne, when you name him the starting quarterback, should have been that right there in the first game, the second game, the third game, when you finally done it. And then you get in the fourth game, this kid's getting his feet up under him. Now, I'm going to say, he's not keeping his eyes up. He's not stepping up in the pocket none. He's dropping them. I see it. But now I'm going to tell y'all something else. I ain't heard nobody say nothing about it. What about the ball that Hooks dropped that hit him right in the daggum hands in the end zone? Who threw that ball?
I think that was that Robbie's ball? I can't remember.
It might have been Robbie.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
We dropped that ball.
Yep.
Now I sit there and watch. I've watched the first half of that game. I've watched it 3 times now. And I'm looking at receivers and everything else. Everybody talking about, oh, maybe they're not got the right. Ain't nobody out there got that kind of depth perception that you can say, no, he ain't running right depth. I'm not going to throw it to him. He's dropping his eyes, and he shook. But he shook because he's not prepared. Now, I don't know whose job that is, whether it's the offensive coordinator doing it or whether it's Hugh Freeze saying, hey, swap him. Yeah, put Robbie in there. And you put Robbie in there, and then you bring Peyton Thorne back in for a 3rd and 18 to a check down to a tight end. Look here. I'm not going to put it all on Thorne, but I'm going to say that coaching staff has done him no favors. They've done that quarterback room no favors. Now, that crap right there, I'm going to say it, you know, and I'm pulling for Auburn. I'm a big-time Auburn fan. I'm always going to be an Auburn fan. But that crap right there is about the most Gus Malzahn-like bull crap I ever seen. Look, y'all guys are getting paid a lot of money. Don't treat somebody how you would want to be treated. Give the guy a fair shake. If he can't do it by the fourth game, you ought to known it. But you haven't given him a fair shake up to the fourth game.
That's an interesting point, Greg.
The thought that
in worrying about being fair to Robbie, Auburn maybe wasn't fair enough to Peyton Thorne in the first, you know, at the end of fall camp and through the first couple of games.
It's a guy that wasn't here in the spring too.
We speculated on, you know, for all, every time you play Robbie, you're taking a rep away from a guy who needs as many reps as possible. Maybe the chickens are coming home to roost on that front a little bit. I don't know. That is an interesting thought.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Greg. We got to move on. And Susan, who we had early on and didn't get a chance to talk to her about an hour ago, is back with us. Hey, Susan. Susan, you there? Oh, did we lose her again?
You want to take a break and see if we can sort this out?
Let's see if we've got her. No, okay. Susan, you get a chance, give us a call back. We need to get to our first break of hour number two here on the Monday Drive.
You can help others in your community. Opelika Share is a way for neighbors to help neighbors. The program benefits...
To or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Let's get right back to the phones. Crawford is up next. Hey, Crawford.
Bill, I feel your pain. I wouldn't like driving in Houston. I wouldn't like driving Dan in L.A. I wouldn't like driving in Chicago. I don't like driving in Atlanta. I don't like driving in Montgomery or Birmingham on the interstate. My wife will not drive on the interstate here in Opelika, Auburn. So God bless you.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Atlanta's a piece of cake compared to what Houston was, I'm telling you.
I won't eat eggs and ham. Yeah.
I've got one comment, and I'm going to hang up.
Susie, an attitude about the traffic. No. Yeah, what's your comment?
My comment is, I told Katie at halftime, I said, the worst thing that could have happened to us was Wegman getting hurt at halftime, because Max Johnson was going to come in. He was going to eat us alive.
I like Max Johnson. Always have.
Yeah, I mean, he's good, and I wish we had him here. So I'm going to hang up and listen to your comments.
Yeah, you know, there was a game, Bo Nix faced Max Johnson in a battle that would have been Harsin's first year, I think. That would have been the 2021,
right?
The Auburn win in Baton Rouge. Both of those quarterbacks, maybe in hindsight, derided a little bit. Now LSU's worked things out, mm-hmm. you know, and Brian Kelly found his guy, and he looks like a pro lately. Like Daniels is making plays
gets rid of the ball so quick, and he is so quick to make the right decision.
I mean, he takes big hits.
He does.
And he's not a big guy, which makes you nervous. Everything else about that's like, oh, that's what you want. And another guy, again, not to be unfair to Peyton, another guy where you would draw the contrast of keeping the eyes downfield when the play breaks down, right?
Max does a very good job, and Daniels is maybe
Caleb Williams is maybe the gold standard of that in college mm-hmm. football right now. Daniels is in that tier, and it's kind of what even the best teams can't offer a clean pocket all the time, right? Like you need LSU has a quarterback out there bootlegging and making plays when things break down. USC, Oregon, like these teams have improvisers. So yeah, I think the ability to improvise more important than ever before for a quarterback. Like, I mean, because of the speed of the defense.
Yeah, that's where you got to have your quarterback and receivers on the same page. So if the quarterback's improvising, the receivers know to keep, you know, to continue to see if they can get open and count on their quarterback getting in the ball.
And that's also something for Auburn to work on, what to do, not just from the quarterback when things break down. Because it seems like things could break down a couple of times this upcoming Saturday against a Georgia defense that plays. You know, the pass rush hasn't been overwhelming, right? Didn't Georgia only have like one sack in the first two or three games?
Yeah.
But the coverage is, you know, the advanced metrics will tell you they're defending receivers, with maybe the exception of the first half against parts of the first half against South Carolina. They're defending receivers as well as anybody. So that's going to be a new challenge for Auburn this week.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
JR's next here on the drive. Hey, JR.
Hey, fellas. Hey, I called after the first game and the scrimmage is just the way that he handled Thorne and like them when he was talking to the media and all. But to me, it's like I know he's played a lot of football, and that's a fact, but it's like his mental makeup can't handle the criticism and the having somebody looking down his back the whole time. Like Saturday to me, when I watched him start that game, it looked like he'd been told all week, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over. And then when he gets in there, it's like you got wide open receivers running, and he just scared to let the ball go. Like he's looking over his shoulder so bad he can't play football.
You know, there may be a little something to that. I mean,
I don't know. I was a little surprised.
I'm just saying there may be something to the Peyton thing there, because I don't know that I've ever heard a coach comment the way Hugh did about Peyton and criticism. Remember back after the
Wasn't there also a line in the press conference today where he was like, Peyton Thorne is so accurate in practice.
And well, he said he had a great week of practice.
Yeah,
last week.
And then, I mean, so I don't know what
it needs to translate to the field.
Yeah, because that first pass, I mean, from the first pass was the one that went over Javarius's head on the crossing route, right? I think it was the first pass Peyton Thorne threw, and I don't know if VAR has a first down there. It's an underneath route on third and eight, third and ten, and there's an A&M receiver that's going to be there after VAR catches it, but that ball sails, right? And that's that's a routine throw that goes well over the head of a receiver and misses. I think it was the commentary made the point of mentioning, was it RG3? It was RG3 on Saturday on TV who mentioned that you can't miss high on those because those are turnover balls often when you miss guys high on drag routes, crossing routes, things like that. Yeah. That's what Auburn went out and did on the first passing play of the game.
334-321-1390. And John is next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Hey, I feel like the game on Saturday is just a bump in the road. I don't put a lot of big picture concern about that. I agree with Brian. I think Coach Freeze is the longtime answer, so not too much to get too concerned about. I was a little bit concerned about some of the game management. I saw this at the end of the Alabama-Ole Miss game, too. But Auburn was down 10 with, I think, 10 minutes left in the game, and it just seemed like maybe they need to hurry up their offense. With the new running clock, it doesn't seem like coaches have at all adjusted to the running clock, because when you're down 10 with 10 minutes left, that's essentially a three-possession game. You've got to stop them, which is a possession, and you need two possessions to tie the game. So I really wish he'd hurried up at the end, and I'm not really sure why you punt on 4th and 25. That's all I got, and maybe someday we'll go back to the normal clock rules. I don't know how much more milk in the cow TV can milk.
Before you hang up,
yeah, sure.
I thought that the fourth down decision I disagreed with the most, and I understand that when your offense isn't playing well and you feel like the defense, you know, is giving you a chance, it's easy to play punt and field position ball. I thought the 4th and 4, where Auburn decided, I think it was 4th and 4 in A&M territory, and Auburn decides to take a delay of game and punt the ball, and they turn a 4th and 4 into a 4th and 9. I thought that was the most questionable of the fourth down decisions, because the analytics will tell you, and it's becoming fairly common in college football, 4th and 5 or shorter on your opponent's side of the field, I mean, the decision to punt there instead of try to extend the drive is that was the one I had the biggest problem with.
Dan, I completely agree with you, because if you look at the analytics, it's going to say go for it. I would just say 4th and 25 with 4 minutes left, throw a Hail Mary. What do you got to lose?
Yeah, so might as well. You might as well. I mean,
yeah, what do you got to lose?
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to make it a one score game.
You are. And one final thought: I'm also a Broncos fan, so after watching that performance on Sunday, I will say one positive. I really think Auburn has a very good defense, so that's the one positive. Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate the call, John. 334. What had just happened before that? Before the 4th and 4.
Let me check.
What was the third down? What was the third down play? I'm trying to remember. That was one of the ones where they were in field goal range, right? And then was that was Weren't they like in field goal range and then got put just a little out of field goal range? It would have made it a what would it have made?
Third and 19, Jarquez Hunter has a 15-yard draw.
Oh, yeah.
To take third and 19 and
make it
fourth and four.
Second down had taken him out of field goal range. But then third down, holding, I thought, put – where was the ball then?
On
fourth and four, where was the ball?
A&M 44.
Okay, so it still would have – yeah, so it, fourth so and Auburn four takes, would have been a 61-yard
Auburn
field
takes
goal.
A delay. Yeah, fourth and four with 6:09 left in the half. Auburn takes a delay and punts on fourth and nine instead of going for it on fourth and four at the A&M 44 in what was then a 6-0 game. Auburn had the – yeah, there's a hold on 2nd and 10, and then a sack on 2nd and 16 that makes it 3rd and 19. Jarquez has what was probably his best run of the game, right? The draw there to make a 3rd and 19, a 4th and 4. I thought the 4th and 4, I thought it was automatic. You go for it there. I know it's second-guessing or whatever. It was first-guessing in the moment. I was shocked to see the punt return, the punt team out there on that one.
Let's get back to the phones before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Inspector is next. Hey, Specter.
Hey, guys. Well, I told you that A&M game was going to be our test.
Oh, it definitely was, and Auburn did not pass.
No.
Literally, they did not pass.
We gave these ones a good workout with Samford for three quarters, hoping that momentum would take us into this game looking pretty good. But it's really sad, sad day when your defense outscores your offense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Thorne, he's definitely shell-shocked. I don't know what happened at Michigan State. You know, that brings me back to, you know, when a kid transfers from one school to another, his academic record follows him. Everything that he did in that school should be recorded in those records. Why isn't that happening with these guys in the portal? I know these coaches have the opportunity.
What do you mean, Specter? You think there's like what's not in the record that should be?
I think his performance in a stressful situation at Michigan State was not there. I mean, is there a reason why other coaches around the league did not look at Thorne?
I mean he was nobody really had a chance. Remember Peyton Thorne went into the portal and Auburn got him immediately.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was in the portal for a long time and nobody went after him. He wasn't Spencer Sanders. Man, Spencer Sanders was a guy that was in the portal for a long time. Yep. And there are a lot of Auburn people going, why didn't Auburn take him? Well, Auburn sure had the opportunity.
And there was the belief that Auburn did their due diligence on Peyton Thorne before recruiting him. I mean, that's a guy I don't know. If there are red flags from Peyton's time at Michigan State that Auburn didn't know about, I mean, I don't really know what you're talking about.
Well, it's simple. I mean, there's film on the guy. Before we take the cake in, and before we buy the cake to eat the cake, I mean, you look like you want to see what's in the recipe, right?
I thought you were talking about off the field. I'm sure Auburn looked at Peyton Thorne on the field. I'm sure they did their due diligence
did
there.
That, yeah.
And decided he was a better option than what they had.
Well, take Peyton Thorne's last year at Michigan State. Yeah, everybody's blaming it on the line and no running back. Well, we didn't have a line and running back either.
No. He still had a year last year that would have been one of the top 10 years for an Auburn quarterback. I mean, that's how.
You know what I got to say to that, Bill?
What's that?
To all these guys that came out of the portal to Auburn, welcome to the SEC.
That is true.
All right, guys.
Talk to you
later.
All right,
I got a couple of things. One thing, now with quarterbacks, Auburn looked at a bunch of other guys.
And
they had to kind of settle on Peyton. I'm not saying he wasn't
at the time he was the best there was available.
Right.
But Auburn had looked at some other guys.
It's also, and with all due respect, Specter, you're one of my favorite callers. But I think that I would discourage anyone from generalizing about quarterbacks that transfer nowadays in college football because it's so commonplace.
Right.
You rarely see a quarterback now play just for one school in college. Like it's more. I mean, what percentage of the starters in the SEC started their college? I mean, it's more than half of the starters in the SEC right now are guys who started their college football careers somewhere else and decided to transfer. Some of the best quarterbacks in college football.
Yeah. I mean, LSU had a pretty good transfer quarterback. I'm not
Caleb Williams.
They've got a pretty good one now.
Yeah, yeah, they
do. Give me a list of the best quarterbacks in college football. Virtually all of them. Caleb Williams, Bo Nix, Michael Penix.
Jaden Daniels,
Shedeur Sanders, Joe Milton.
Sam Hartman.
Sam Hartman.
I mean, it's on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's incredible. And so I would say that's also, like, I understand you're a little bit iffy about why a guy transfers, but the best quarterbacks in college football are also transferring more frequently than in any other position.
One more thing. He said it's a sad day when your defense outscores your offense. I would normally agree to that, but I also want to take you back to a game that I was at September 17th, 1994, right over there at Jordan-Hare Stadium. When I forget the LSU quarterback's name, but he threw three interceptions for touchdowns or
four for touchdowns.
Yeah.
Jamie Howard.
Yeah, that was a pretty good day. Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
That's not a sad day. Well, no. if they score four touchdowns, then that's okay.
Yeah. So that is one example that is not always the case.
When was that game?
94.
You know who was there that day? Jimbo Fisher.
He was
there that day on the Auburn sideline as a position coach.
And Auburn struggled big time offensively.
And I think Jimbo Fisher, speaking of that game, I think Jimbo Fisher decided on Saturday he was not turning it over with interceptions once the Max Johnson deep ball touchdown goes. Mm-hmm. I tweeted, check please. And that's because I didn't think there was any way Auburn's offense was going to get going. And I thought that A&M was going to be incredibly conservative and try to run the ball. Might have worked. Right, if that ball doesn't pop out and fly into Eugene Asante's hands, A&M probably salts the game away, and it's what, 27-3? Maybe is the final score you're looking at. And so I think that was the A&M game plan once they built a double-digit lead. Yeah.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Let's get to the phones, and Jordan is up next. Hey, Jordan.
Good afternoon, guys. Enjoying the show today. I think everybody needs to just calm down. That was one game. Everyone's being honest. They probably didn't have that circled as a win prior to the season.
Oh, you're right.
So let's not panic just yet. I think the caller about three or four ago, when he mentioned that, we should have been playing Peyton the entire first three games. And I think that the coaches did do a disservice by keeping Robbie hanging over his shoulder. Robbie's an athlete. I don't believe he's a quarterback. But when you put him in the game, I mean, why aren't we running reverses off of Robbie? Why aren't we throwing screen passes with Peyton or short hitters that, quick hit so he doesn't have to worry about the rush to get him settled in? I've heard Hugh mention that the receivers are running the wrong routes or breaking them off, et cetera. So you drop back and you're looking for that guy to be 15 yards downfield on the left hash, and he's not there, then what do? You panic. So, there may be more to it, what's going on behind the scenes in regards to play calling, substitutions, that kind of thing. I was at the game Saturday. We had receivers wide open behind the defense.
No question. At least, I would say, I think three times. I know there were two that I was looking right at from my point of view, but you're right. Auburn had some guys open.
Right. And, we mentioned earlier that Luke Deal is the Eugene Asante of the offense. And I think earlier y'all said he only played 11 plays.
That was a surprise. That really was a surprise to me.
Yeah. And, I saw 77, who was probably our best offensive lineman last year, warming up, and I thought they'd put him in the second half because that offensive line on some plays was just being eaten alive. But we stuck with the same people and kept getting the same results. So, I've heard him mention the receiver room especially, and those drop passes, been waiting for Cam Brown to break out. Hits him right in the hands, he can make a play, and what's he do? He drops it. Same thing with Hollywood. So, I think everybody should calm down. We don't have the horses. Can't win the Kentucky Derby with a mule, and we just need to let Hugh work his magic, and we'll get to where we need to be.
Good stuff, Jordan.
No, and it's it's frustrating because, it, like with Hugh Freeze talking about points left on the board, like a game can feel winnable. I think it would be a dishonest reading of the Auburn-Texas A&M game to say, oh, Auburn could have very easily won the game.
If you go into the locker room up 12-6, I mean, the defense was playing well enough there in the first half that you thought you hit a play and you could win. But then, man, you just got absolutely dominated in the third quarter.
I mean, the third quarter of the game on Saturday was one of the most one-sided quarters Auburn football's ever played in an SEC game.
Third quarter was one of the most miserable experiences that I've been through.
Yeah, and you were
It was god-awful hot.
And you were at the blackout.
And it was like, oh, man.
You were at the blackout.
You just felt it going. It's like, man, Auburn's melting, and I'm either going to melt or spontaneously combust
like,
here.
I think Auburn could have won the game, but I feel like it would have been, you know, a lot would have needed to be different to come away feeling like Auburn was the better team. Like, some of that would have needed to be mistakes by A&M. To keep Auburn in that game longer, especially when they started to pull away in the second half and Auburn just didn't have the depth to stop them.
334-321-1390. Oh, we're going to try one more time with Susan. Hopefully the third time.
Oh, I was at the A&M game. My son goes to A&M. My daughter's an Auburn graduate. God, it was a horrible day. It was horrible for us.
It was. The A&M folks were great.
No, they're the sweetest people.
But God, it was hot.
My son's out there. He just like, hey, mommy, look, I went to Wright School. I was like, yeah, you're 3 hours away. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you. So we live in DFW. We're originally from Alabama. But I'll tell you something. This quarterback, it's embarrassing to me. It really is. I just wish we could have Quinn Ewers. I mean, I love Quinn. Quinn went to school with my kids, and he's amazing. And he's like, you guys could have gotten such a better quarterback. What the hell is going on?
Well, but Quinn Ewers, I mean, everybody was after Quinn Ewers, and right. He picked Ohio State and Texas.
Well,
like,
Let me tell you something about Quinn. He would come to Auburn. He told me this personally. Like, my kids know him. They're like, this is great. He goes, Auburn didn't. Like, Gus wasn't that happy about me. And then Brian Harsin didn't even ask for anything. I said, boy, you could have gone there. But he's happy. He's an amazing quarterback. We're so proud of him. But when he goes into the pros, we're like, hey, good Quinn, right? But, you know, we have to get a good quarterback.
There's no question. We appreciate the phone call, Susan. There's no question that Auburn needs to turn, like Hugh Freeze needs to turn Auburn into a destination for quarterbacks and
right.
receivers.
And that's and there's no doubt, Brian. That's his plan.
That's the
mission.
Goal. Yeah, and it's if he's not doing it in a couple of years, you know, it's tough to imagine this thing being successful.
We'll get one more before our final break of the afternoon. And Brett is next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. Two callers ago, the guy said a lot of Auburn fans didn't think that that Auburn was going to win the game. That's probably true, but
yeah, I think he didn't mean Auburn fans. I mean, I think he just figured a lot of people didn't mark this one down as a win.
Most Auburn fans I know didn't think they'd win, but at least thought that we would move the ball somewhat.
Sure,
No matter what you say, the passing game is not bad. It's abysmal.
It's
just awful. And, you know, yeah, there were a lot of play calls called that were, you know, very good. I mean, I know we could all name them right now. But, you know, they talk about the first 5 minutes of the first half, first five of the second half, and, you know, also the last five. But to begin the game, play calling was just horrendous. A quarterback draw, but when you know the whole team's coming downhill on the first play, the whole team, then we run it again and throw a pass, you know, and then we do the same thing, run pass the second half. And I don't know if I think you, Dan, you were on Doug Amos' show today. The call on third and 14, the tight end screen, they were rushing three people, had another one at the line, but he drops back. There was absolutely no way that play was going to work from the time it was called. I mean, it just was.
You'd have to call them an all-out blitz.
There seemed to be a couple plays. We referenced one in the first half where both Dylan Wade and Jay Fair point out a blitzer, and then that guy comes up. I think that might have been a quarterback draw where Thorne was going to try to run inside and get inside before the outside blitzer could get to him. But there seemed to be a couple plays where it just looked pre-snap, it looked like advantage A&M, and Auburn runs the set. And that's frustrating to see, right? Because it's like, ooh, this doesn't look like it's going to work, and then it doesn't work. You wonder if something could have been done before the ball was snapped.
Well, for sure, I'm glad Auburn's got Hugh Freeze. I think he's going to do a great job. The recruiting is a lot better than I thought it would be. But certainly you would agree the first two really real opponents we've had, play calling has really been bad. Just call a spade, it's been bad, very bad.
Well, it certainly it certainly hasn't seemed to fit the weaknesses that we've seen from the Auburn offense.
Last thing real quick. Certainly he could, and I hope he can. I don't know how he's gone from throwing 27 touchdowns, 3,000 yards in the Big Ten, and he's just curling up as soon as a rush even gets anywhere around him. I actually think by the end of the season, Holden Gariner is going to be the quarterback because he's the only one who goes back, has a little confidence about him, sees the field, and then throws the ball. I mean, right now, Lord willing, we don't play much against Georgia and LSU away because he'll end up losing confidence. Tell me what y'all think about that.
Well, I do think that this is the wrong time to go to Holden just because he is a young guy and you're playing the number one team in the country, and then you're going to have to go on the road 2 weeks later. Is it 2 weeks later?
Yes.
And play one of the best teams in the country and one of the toughest places to play in the country. That just doesn't make sense.
Is the plan to go to – for the folks that want Holden in the game now, like, is the plan to go to Holden and air it out against Georgia? Like maybe the best secondary in college football? And you're gonna air it out against them, and because my thinking would be if you decide that the status quo isn't working, and Hugh Freeze at the press conference today said he thinks Peyton Thorne will start against Georgia, but my thinking would be that if you're concerned about the pass rush getting to Thorne or Holden, Robbie can maybe extend plays, and that would give you a better chance to win against teams like A&M and Georgia and LSU. Whether or not it's enough for the offense to win, like I don't know, but it seems like Robbie might give you a better chance in the short term against these teams that against a Peyton Thorne or a Holden Gariner could just eat those quarterbacks alive.
We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Anthony, hang on. You're up when we come back to wind things up here on the Monday Drive.
Attention large property owners and adventure seekers. If you're looking for